My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. In her groundbreaking 1976 book, When God Was a Woman, Merlin Stone evoked a memory of a time before patriarchal religion by saying, "For people raised and programmed on the patriarchal religions of today, religions that affect even the most secular aspects of our society, perhaps there remains a lingering, almost innate memory of sacred shrines and temples tended by priestesses who served in the religion of the original supreme deity. In the beginning, people prayed to the creatress of life, the mistress of heaven. At the very dawn of religion, God was a woman. Do you remember?" In much of the world today, the concept of God as a woman would in a minimum be considered heresy, and in many cultures result in risking one's life. My guest tonight, Lazara Firefox Allen, wants us to do more than remember. Her new book, Jailbreaking the Goddess, is a revolutionary and radical revisioning of the feminine divine. A wild-hearted change agent, Lazara delivers tools for transformation, provides strategies for embodiment, and creates vibrant spaces for personal and collective liberation. Lazara's coaching and teaching work weaves together themes of empowerment, embodiment, body positivity, sexual liberation, feminism, and owning our whole selves. Please join me in welcoming Lazara Firefox Allen. Good evening, Lazara.
Good evening. Thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you so much for joining us. Very exciting that your book is actually just being released right now.
It is indeed.
So let's get a little bit into you and about what you're about and how this book came about. Your bio describes you as a wild-hearted change agent. Please elaborate on what that means.
So that's funny because that phrase came out of some work that I did with a coach who was like, you really need to be able to encapsulate it into a couple of words. And it's hard to encapsulate what one does into a couple of words. But the main thing that I love is being right in the center of major transformation and staying engaged on a compassionate heart level while that's going on. So I get to do that work ongoingly, thank goodness. I've built my life and living around that, and so that's what I bring.
Now, your parents entered the pagan community when you were a child, and you grew up offering ritual in the names of the old gods the world over. How did that shape your life?
Well, I would say, especially in relationship to Jailbreaking the Goddess, an interesting element is that I come to paganism from a different angle or perspective than a lot of people do, because a lot of people kind of received their paganism later on, and they had to move out of other religions that they'd been raised in and then get to paganism, as grown people. And I was brought into paganism as a young person. We started practicing in a group when I was in my preteens, but really I was raised pagan from the get-go. And on both sides, we had what some people would call superstitions or, any number of other dismissive terms, but I really look at them as family traditions of witchcraft.
And had your parents had a background in interfaith or intercultural studies?
My mother was raised Protestant, although she started reaching out for other religious experiences at a young age and would go to different churches and synagogues and, experience other religious paths with her friends. My mom is also a priestess, pagan priestess, and is very, was infused with the spirit from very early on and has stories of her father died in World War II, and she he would come to her as a spirit and interact with her in her dreams and in her waking time too. So she, even though he wasn't around in body, she definitely felt like he was there as a guardian for her. And I think that in some ways that relationship with her loss of her, you know, her father not being, you know, present in his body, really encouraged her to experience spirituality from an early age.
And what about your dad?
My father is, his father was a Mason. I don't know that his mother was religious. I think they were Catholicly oriented, but from a young age, he told us stories. Like he said that we were descended from the Pixies, which, you know, actually the Picts, the indigenous people of the Isles. But I think, you know, when you look at folk tales and lay it over historical occurrences, I think it's very likely that the Picts and the Pixies are the same.
Now, how did the transition into pagan community affect your relationship with your friends and your family friends and other members of the family?
Yeah, I grew up, my parents were back to the land hippies. So all of my friends were you know, hill kid, hippie kid, you know, folks. We were all outside of the margins anyway. And so there wasn't, I was homeschooled through high school. I wasn't in a lot of circumstances where I would have felt a major amount of static around my religious identity.
So there was no judgment from your immediate friends and family. And what about extended family? Anything there?
You know, some, but I never have really, I've never really taken that on, not to sound too, you know, hippy dippy, but it's not, I, as much as possible, I try not to attach to the things that are going to, that will make me, that will drag me down. Honestly, I have sought out throughout my life, I've sought out diverse experiences and coming from outside of the dominant culture and then moving into it, I actually entered into the monotheisms for a while. I studied Islam quite deeply in 2007. And so for my own, you know, my own sense of growth and spiritual purpose, it's been important for me to reach outside of the known and to, you know, really, really check out all the different spiritual paths.
Yeah, I was a child of the 60s, like your parents, I assume, and wouldn't call myself a full-fledged hippie, but very, very open to embracing all types of alternative ideas and having been sort of aware of energy and connection to spirit since I was very, very young. It was a major part in forming my life, and I fortunately had grandparents who really embraced it and supported me and encouraged me. Now, at 22, you were initiated as a member of a priesthood for Hellenic Mystery School. What was that like, and how did that shape the way that you came out to be today?
Well, I would say that my own process with the Hellenic myths, and this is the Eleusinian Mystery School, and the Rites of Eleusis, I think I've gone through periods of time because for those of you who do not have any familiarity with the Eleusinian Rites, the story at the center of the Eleusinian Rites is the Demeter's myths and the process of basically abduction that happens to Kore, who then transitions and becomes Persephone in the underworld. As a feminist, I've definitely been through some little corners in my own process where I had to really question, why do we need to be reenacting a myth that basically has at its center a rape story? And the fact is that until we've healed the culture, the myth holds relevance.
Absolutely. Now, you were ordained into the Church of All Worlds. What was the study like that led you there, and how would you describe the work that you do as a result of that ordination?
My ordination process went on for 10 years. I took a 10-year path to ordination. There wasn't any set amount of time that you were supposed to be in pursuit of your ordination, but my ordination took a lot longer than some. I also believe that that was partially because I was the first of the second generation mm-hmm. who was ordained. And so there was a certain element of intergenerational conflict that had to be overcome mm-hmm. so that I could arrive at my ordination and be part of that community in my own standing.
And how does that community serve? How do you serve within the context of that community?
Well, I'm no longer part of that church, but I feel like the training that I got there has been invaluable and really led to me being a very well-rounded spiritual practitioner
and clergy member. Was this an interfaith seminar or an interfaith organization?
It was actually a non-denominational pagan organization.
I see. Now, your book, Jailbreaking the Goddess, A Radical Revisioning of Feminist Spirituality, challenges women to change how they perceive themselves. Do you consider this a book for pagans?
I consider it a book for pagans and witches and feminists. And my hope is that the book will be read by people who have not yet found goddess spirituality. And that it will be a doorway to an integrated spiritual process that's part of our political orientation.
My guest tonight is Lasara Firefox Allen, author of the new book, Jailbreaking the Goddess, A Radical Revisioning of Feminist Spirituality. We'll be back with more of our interview with Lasara after these messages from the OM Times Radio Network. This is Destination Unlimited.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Hello, I'm Miriam Knight of New Consciousness Review, inviting you to my new show where I interview the rising stars of the conscious awakening. We'll explore the many faces of consciousness in action and intriguing perspectives on life, the universe, and everything in between. Join us each Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern on the Rising Stars Show.
More than 1 million wild animals are killed each year illegally. Poaching is a major threat to our country's wildlife. I'm Tom Barry. I'm an actor with a desire to preserve living space for wildlife. The Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust does just that. Works with private landowners to protect wildlife, to preserve natural habitats. To learn more or to work with the Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust, call 800-729-SAVE. That's 800-729-SAVE or visit wildlifelandtrust.org. Thank you.
What if we got rewarded for every good decision?
Dinner. Meal needs a vegetable. Check.
Amazing!
Vegetables cooked with a healthier oil instead of butter?
Fantastic!
Replacing bad fats with healthier fats, like those in canola or vegetable oil, is good for your heart. Take up the challenge for good health, because the you of the future will say,
fantastic!
Visit heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info proudly supports the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
And we're back on Destination Unlimited. My guest tonight, Lasara Firefox Allen, author of the new book, Jailbreaking the Goddess, A Radical Revisioning of Feminist Spirituality. That's a powerful title. What inspired it? Did you have a vision, or how did that come about?
Well, so the original title of the book was The Fivefold Goddess. My editor, when I handed her the manuscript, she was like, this is amazing, and it's gone, you know, it's so much bigger than just this new model, and we need a title that will allow people to know that just by looking at the cover. And I was at an anarchist book fair. I go to the anarchist book fair in the Bay Area. I'm an anarchist. I go to the anarchist book fair every year. It's a great event, and it's put on by an amazing, dedicated group of anarchist activists, community activists. And I saw a couple of books with the title Jailbreaking in them, and I was looking at the context of how that term was being used, and it really rung true for me. When I started thinking about the work that is being done in this book, in Jailbreaking the Goddess, that concept of breaking, not just the goddess, who I know that at heart that the goddess is liberated and beyond our ability to constrain her or him or it, and still in our own consciousness, we have a considerable amount of constraint that we put ourselves under and that we put others under. And that we also, one of the things that I learned in studying Islam was that the main sin, the largest missing of the mark, is when we try to define God. Mm-hmm. So Allah is beyond consideration. We can't conceive of God. And so when we try to, we create partialities. We create limitations on God. And so I feel that way about our concept of the goddess. I think of the divine ultimately as beyond gender. I think our gender, if for those who have read the book, you will know that gender is much, I believe that gender is much more complicated than we like to boil it down to.
Mm.
So goddess is kind of shorthand almost for a very large concept. And so the idea of jailbreaking the goddess is really much more about jailbreaking our own ideas of the feminine divine.
So what are some of the ways, and you said that we're not going to confine this to any gender, but we'll use the word goddess. What are some of the ways goddess has been either imprisoned or lost?
Well, I think that, that starts at the presupposition that we had a liberated goddess before. And I don't necessarily ascribe to a golden era idea that we at one point were liberated and now we're confined. I think that we're working our way through our confinement and that the ultimate outcome will be liberation. What's happened before, we have no way of knowing. If it helps people to believe in a golden era, that's great. The thing that I caution against in Jailbreaking the Goddess in that arena is any kind of monolithic prehistory is reductionist and leaves out stories that we may want to hear. And we reduce stories all the time when we think, our story is the story and we forget that there are other stories. And so Jailbreaking the Goddess is very much about pulling all of those stories in as a collective history.
But what happened to the she, and I say she with a capital S, why was she written out of the patriarchal history, or was she?
I see your question. I believe that, a lot of this, in my opinion, comes down to the need to control women because of economic systems.
Mm-hmm.
So economic systems of chattel, where patriarchy and patrilineality are issues. Patrilineality is where the line of succession is passed down through the father's line. Mm-hmm. There are existing matrilineal cultures that are still patriarchal, but the lineage is passed through the matrilineal line. So so monetarily, there are different rules, right? So it's important to break down all of those categories. But I think that the reasons that women and the goddess have been written out of history and pushed to the sides, the edges, or off the page entirely in many cases, is because in order for men to have control, men, and by men I mean the patriarchy, that the patriarchy needs to control women. Because it's the only way we know whose baby is whose.
Right. Now, getting back to this concept of the control, especially economic control, property control. Wasn't that one of the elements of the early church and why women were basically, why priests were not allowed to marry and why women were not allowed to hold position? Because in those days, the land that the church was built upon would have been passed on after the priest passed away to his wife.
That is true. That's true. Yeah, I mean, the structures of finance and how finance controls socialization and social structures is deeply embedded. And so one of the conversations that's being had in polytheist and pagan communities at this point is very much about, you know, how do we dismantle consumerist culture? How do we dismantle the economic systems of oppression?
Was the transition from agrarian society to more of a trading society partly responsible for this?
You know, I'm not a historian, and all of my research only leads to guesses, so I don't want to make any grand statements of how things occurred to any large extent. But I will say that I believe that the there's a feminist who I cite in Jailbreaking the Goddess and who I find very inspiring. Her name is Suzu, and she talks about how from the beginning of Western culture that women have been subjugated. And I say, yes, from the beginning of Western culture, women have been subjugated. We don't know if they were subjugated before that, but as far back as we have historical accounts for in our culture, women have been subjugated. That doesn't mean women all over the world have been subjugated. There are still little cultural pockets of, you know, there are indigenous communities that have not been fully colonized where power structures are very different, right? So we know it's not an innate human biological pattern, right?
So how has the either disowning or disallowing of the divine feminine in patriarchal society impacted the way that women are seen and treated today?
Oh, yeah, that's a big one. The first thing I want to talk about in that arena is that we are that women, we see ourselves from the outside of ourselves. We're so thoroughly objectified that we see ourselves from outside of ourselves. Marketing is designed that way. It's designed to perpetuate that process, right? We're encouraged to continually look at ourselves from the outside. We're encouraged to see ourselves as a product, not a process. And when we look at how all of this, you know, came down through the ages, it wasn't so long ago that women needed to trade on their sexual, their sexual purity and their sexual ability and their procreative capacity. It wasn't so long ago that we needed to trade on that in order to survive.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So we're talking about a few generations ago. It's so recent. And we like to think that it was a long time ago. It wasn't a long time ago. And most of us remember this. And if not in our own history, in our own stories, like the stories of our grandparents, the stories even of our mothers. My mother is almost 80. And the stories of how she was conditioned as a child around the eventual outcomes of her life and how radically the rules changed in her lifetime, is amazing, right? So you have a generation of people, men and women and others, who are all existing with multiple rule books,
yeah.
Which I think has been very confusing, honestly, for all parties. And I'll say both when I say, you know, both, you know, obviously I'm referring to the binary masculine, feminine. Men and women have been having a hard time figuring out how to create the equality that we're seeking.
Now, you note in your book that slavery is still alive and well. Please share some of the ways it exists in our world and how women are impacted.
Yeah. So slavery still exists. We all know this when we really think about it. Slavery is not just a phenomenon that happened here in the United States, obviously, although it's a very necessary element of our our collective history for us to look at. But also it's happening, slavery, you know, actual ownership. There's a great book called a great film called Girl Rising, which is worth watching, on that topic about girls in slavery in different countries in the world. It's very intense and well worth the watch. And also we have the prison industrial complex, which is where slavery is happening in the United States today. And it's not a stretch to call that slavery. It's a system that is set up for the oppression of a class of people.
My guest tonight is LaSara Firefox Allen. She's the author of the new book, Jailbreaking the Goddess, A Radical Revisioning of Feminist Spirituality. The book just came out. LaSara, please tell our listeners where they can find your book and find out more about this work that you do.
People can find me at my website, LaSaraFirefoxAllen.com. You can find me by searching the title of the book, Jailbreaking the Goddess. I'm also very active on Facebook. I'm kind of active on Twitter. I'm active on Instagram. So you can find me on any of those formats or platforms. I love interaction. Drop me a note. I would be happy to answer you back. I prefer interacting on my wall if I don't know you in person. So drop me a note on my wall and let's interact there and make a party of it.
And you also teach online classes.
I do. I do. I teach ongoingly. I also have an active coaching practice.
And coaching, what type of coaching?
I do personal coaching and I also do entrepreneurial coaching for people who are creatives like me.
Wonderful. And we'll be back with more of LaSara Firefox Allen on Destination Unlimited on the OM Times Radio Network after these messages.
You're listening to OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Are you in an interfaith relationship and thinking of getting married? For 18 years, Reverend Lori Sue Brockway has been creating personalized, loving, and romantic ceremonies for couples of all faiths and cultural backgrounds. Reverend Lori Sue's sensitivity to the needs of interfaith couples is reflected in the compassionate and inclusive way she addresses the concerns of parents and families. Reverend Lori Sue is also the author of several best-selling books on interfaith weddings and wedding vows. Selected as one of the top interfaith officiants by New York Magazine, Reverend Lori Sue serves couples in the New York metropolitan area and beyond. Find out more at her website, yourinterfaithwedding.com.
Have you ever wondered how to change your love paradigm? The secret key is finding a love partnership, not just a regular connection. How do you find these? Through conscious relationships. Ascending Hearts Dating is a dating site for people like you that believes in second chances and a different type of spiritual connection. Try Ascending Hearts for free today at AscendingHearts.com and change your love paradigm. Ascending Hearts, the premier dating community for the spiritually awake.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
This is OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
And we're back on Destination Unlimited. My guest this evening, LaSara Firefox Allen, author of the new book, Jailbreaking the Goddess, A Radical Revisioning of Feminist Spirituality. Before the break, we were talking about slavery around the world, but there's another kind of slavery. Have we become passive about women's rights and equality? Do you think enough women feel they need a jailbreak too? Or is acceptance of the status quo one of the barriers to helping women get set free from what we would call everyday slavery?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, and my response is complicated. I think that, and one of the things that I talk about in Jailbreaking the Goddess is the concept of white feminism, which I know is like a hot button term and a lot of people hear it and get uncomfortable. I'm going to invite everyone, if you're feeling uncomfortable right now about that term, I invite you to examine why you might be feeling uncomfortable about it. What is it about that term that makes you feel uncomfortable? So what I'm offering and hoping for is that we as white feminists can take responsibility for our own institutionalized racism and our own white supremacist tendencies, which we all have regardless because it's how we were raised, where it's a we live in a white supremacist culture. So so if we as white feminists can take responsibility for the fact that we are white feminists and look outside of our own limitations, right? That's its own kind of jail that we're allowing ourselves to remain in, a gilded jail of privilege. So I think that the redemption, you know, the absolute ultimate liberation is going to come through our person-to-person connections with people who are from different backgrounds than we are, you know, of different traditions than we are. So as we reach out for people who are having a different experience of what it means to be a woman, right? Because when we say, what does it mean to be a woman in America? Generally speaking, we hear about the white experience.
And how does the influx of immigration in the last, especially the last few years, of women coming from, and families coming from countries where women basically have been subjugated to male dominance, how does that affect what we're talking about?
Well, I think the first thing that we need to do as white feminists is to, and this happened for me in a very big way when I was in the Middle East in 2007, in studying Islam, I learned in a very rapid way how to decenter the white, you know, perspective. I think that it's easy for us to think that we're doing feminism right and other people aren't feminists, or they aren't doing feminist right because they aren't doing it the way that we're doing it. And so for me, it was a very liberating, immensely liberating, to realize that I didn't really understand how feminism works for Muslim women. And just because I can't recognize feminism when I look at them, that's because I'm using my own yardstick. Right. And so when I allowed myself to enter into Muslim community and become a part of a, you know, a Muslim family, I experienced feminism in a way that I never would have seen it here. So one of the things that I think will help us to break through our own limitations is to realize that we, you know, I'm not the center of the universe. I'm a center of the universe, and everybody else has their own center that they're at. And I can learn from them. I can learn from the different kinds of feminism. And I have learned so much in the process of writing Jailbreaking the Goddess. I really did a lot of self-education around what it means to be a feminist and to be Native American, or what it means to be a feminist and be a Black woman, because I want those voices at the fore. Those are the people that I think have the ability to accelerate the process right now.
Go ahead. You know, I think taking that to the next level, I think that we have to get away from our, I would call, America centricity and the way we think in the United States and the way we look at each other and view the rest of the world, and actually start walking in their shoes, the other folks, and seeing what their life is like. And I think if we started really doing that, hearts would open with compassion. We'd have a totally different relationship with everyone else.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the fact of the matter is, like, we can look at a culture from the outside and make a lot of decisions about it that are not accurate based on our presets, right? Mm-hmm. But when I went into those communities, like I was in this tiny little town in the southern part of the West Bank, Palestine, and I was the guest of a family, and it was, I think there were seven sons, and they had all boys in that, they still do, like, this family only has boys. It's very interesting. But the mother, the wife, and she was tiny. She was this, like, amazing being. She obviously held everything together, and no one, like, it wasn't awkward, but no one did anything without making sure she was cool with it. You know, she was very much the center of the family. She was very much this wild grounding force that just, I mean, she was amazing. She was an amazing woman. And when we step out of our own ideas of what it means to be feminist or a strong woman or to be, you know, holding that down, I think we learn a lot.
Now, you share a story in Jailbreaking the Goddess about an indigenous people of Australia. Is it pronounced the Yanyue or Yanyua?
I do not know the exact pronunciation, but I have heard it both of those ways.
Okay, and you say that in that group of people, there's one dialect for men's spoken language and a different one for women. The children speak the women's language until puberty, at which point the boys go and live with the men and learn the male language. But there are other instances of different languages for men and women. How does this create a deficit among women, and how does this result in those cultures and dominance over women?
Well, so we can use the example. I talk a lot about language in the book, and we can look at the norms of masculine and feminine language even in the United States. There's a ton of data out there, like a ton of data about how men and how women communicate and how, and then of course, you know, this is again reverting to the binary, which is problematic, but for norms, it's worth talking about. So one of the things to take into account is that gender is a performance. Right? It's a concept. So gender is a performance. We perform gender. And we perform gender according to expectations, social expectations. When women speak, we do a lot more pausing and asking for enrollment and second guessing or asking someone else to make the ultimate choice about what's being discussed. Even if we don't ask outright, we're leaving the space for that, right? So in a group dynamic, for example, of two men, three women in a business meeting, the three women might be discussing and saying, well, what do you think? This is what I found, but does anyone else have any more information that I didn't get yet, right? And the men will say things like, well, what I believe is, or this is what I know. And then the women will say, we'll leave the floor open. And sometimes in a lot of, and this is like, it's not even noticeable unless you're paying attention, but sometimes in many groups, a woman will put an idea out, it won't gain traction. And then 5 minutes later, a man will put the same idea out and the idea will be adopted.
Mm-hmm. Now, are you an advocate of gender neutral language?
I think that there are a lot of ways that we can get to the outcome. I think gender-neutral language is a great idea. I also think using language, I wouldn't say neutral, but like uncoupling language from gender. So when we say strong, we mean strong.
Right.
Right. When we say gentle, we mean gentle. When it's not code for something else.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm.
When we say he's a gentle man, we aren't saying he's effeminate. We're saying he's a gentle man.
Right. Is this the new dialect that we need to reach for?
I believe it is part of a larger overhaul of the language that's happening automatically, to be honest. And I think that one of the things that is worth taking into account is that women's language has been devalued. And when I say, like, that's a huge concept, women's stories have been devalued. Our women writers have been devalued. The way that women speak is devalued. The way that we share information has been devalued. Stories of war are more important than cookbooks, right? So this, in a historical view and also right now, contemporarily. And also the voices of the poor have been devalued, and the voices of marginalized people have been devalued, and the voices of people of color have been devalued. And so as these voices gain more traction in pop culture, for example, I believe that we have an opportunity to move toward a more collaborative experience.
You know, you write in your book, the stealthy tendrils of patriarchy worm their way into the deepest recesses of our consciousness. What are some of the things that need to happen to make the shift?
I think having the conversations is the first step. Talking about the things that are challenging to talk about. I think confronting these things in our own selves and then confronting them in our relationships is essential. And to do that work, all parties need to be on board. So I think that the concept of language of consent comes into play as well, that we need to learn how to ask permission to engage on these topics and then to do it responsibly.
My guest tonight, Lasara Firefox Allen, author of the new book, Jailbreaking the Goddess, a Radical Revisioning of Feminist Spirituality. When we're going to come back, we're going to talk about the model of the goddess as Lasara sees it. Back after these messages on Destination Unlimited on the OM Times Radio Network.
As difficult as it is to believe, there are places in Africa where human traffickers sell albino children and their body parts for use in magic rituals. Humanity Healing International is actively working in Uganda to change this paradigm. The Albino Rescue Project finds albino children who are at risk and places them in safe schools and environments where they can learn and grow free from fear. To learn more or to sponsor a child, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Every Tuesday on Living with Moxie, join Shefali Burns and Donna Martouge in conversations designed to take you to the next level, where we highlight ideas, resources, and strategies that provide you with the leverage you require to meet and exceed your business and personal goals. Each week on Living with Moxie, we will lead conversations related to success, achievement, fulfillment, and extraordinary, vibrant living. Are you ready to live with Moxie? Join us.
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Sylvia Henderson, intuitive life coach and energy healer. Are you ready to elevate and rise way above your normal? Be sure to listen to my show, Intuitive Transformations, on OM Times Radio, Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern. Get the inspiration you need to transform your life.
I want to thank my mommy for loving me so much.
For taking me to the doctor when I broke my foot.
For leaving me alone when I wanted to be alone.
And now, as a grown-up, I'm thankful for being able to take care of you, my dear mom. For taking you to your therapies. For understanding that sometimes you simply want to be alone.
Roles change without us noticing. That's why AARP gives you the information to provide even better care for your loved one. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
In the small town of Elmira, New York, a boy was born into an all-American family. The odds of him achieving his dream in the fashion industry? 1 in 23 million. The odds of having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 68. I am Tommy Hilfiger, and my family is affected by autism. Learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
And we're back on Destination Unlimited. My guest this evening, Lasara Firefox Allen, author of the new book, Jailbreaking the Goddess, a Radical Revisioning of Feminist Spirituality. Now, most of us are familiar with what was called the threefold system of the goddess, the maiden, the mother, and the crone. But you contend that this model is off. You say many women couldn't settle into that model or that it doesn't accurately represent women. Please share some of your concerns with that approach.
Absolutely. So this is the fulcrum of my whole thesis, really. And this was the inception of this book. The threefold model is based in our biology and in our procreative utility. And when our concept of the feminine divine is rooted in our concept of feminine utility, our concept of the feminine is about utility. So we no longer have sovereignty.
So if the threefold model of the goddess is rooted in biology, are you concerned that a woman is defined by her uterus and her procreative powers, and that it leaves out women who either can't conceive, do not want to have children, women who've had radical organ removal, or have been forced into sterilization?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, there are many of those women in my immediate community. And since I've been writing the book and offering courses on the topic, and since I have published the book and have had people reading it, I have had more and more stories of women coming to me and saying, I felt left out and now I feel like I have a home. And that's, you know, was really part of what I was aiming for. Another piece is that there are many people in my immediate community who are trans women. And so trans women also, as you may know, there has been quite a schism in the pagan goddess-oriented community around around trans identity. And there are some who decidedly want to leave trans women out of the feminine divine. And I feel like that's just misguided and heartbreaking, to be honest. My younger child is trans. I consider myself to be non-binary, or on the non-binary spectrum. I go by she, her pronouns, but my personal experience is not of the binary, gender-wise. And I feel like the limitation, there's one of the sections in Jailbreak and the Goddess, it says the gender binary is colonization. And I do feel like gender is a way that we have been colonized, and that in a lot of traditions, in a lot of native and indigenous cultures, there are more than two genders.
Right, right.
Right. So two genders is not, again, I'm going to say, not a natural, you know, like we like to think that things are natural or unnatural. I have a problem with that languaging anyway,
right.
But let's just use it for a moment. It's not a natural thing to have two genders any more than it's a natural thing to have more than two genders.
Absolutely. Now, please explain for our listeners your fivefold goddess model.
The fivefold is Femela, which is the divine child. Potens, which is the powerful one, Creatrix, she's the female creator, Sapientia, which means wise woman, but also master of her art, and then Antiqua, which means ancient woman. So those are the five faces that we explore in Jailbreaking the Goddess.
Now, you cover quite a bit of ground explaining the different aspects of these goddesses and how to honor them or call upon them. What kinds of rituals or practical magic will readers find in your book?
A lot. They'll find a lot of that. Because part of it for me, you know, concepts are all well and good, and they obviously, concepts are great. They're what allow us to break free. But until we take those concepts and integrate them into our functional everyday lives, I don't think that we're really going to get the traction that we need to make the changes that are essential to arrive at this more inclusive space.
Now, you mentioned that you do not intimately know all the goddesses in your book, that you're attempting to offer a wide variety of goddesses from different religions, cultures, and countries. Why do you think diversity among divine femininity is important for women? Is that so they can recognize the divine within themselves?
Absolutely. Representation is essential. In listening to my community over the years, I've heard a lot from a lot of people about feeling alienated by the overwhelmingly white Eurocentric imagery that's so present in contemporary paganism.
Now, can you give us an example of a couple of the rituals that the readers will find with reference to these goddesses?
Yeah, so basically you can... There are a lot of different ways for you to do ritual in the book. And I think of things like journaling as ritual too. So I have kind of a wide swath of what I consider to be ritual activity. So there are activities There are journaling prompts. You can use those as ritual activities or just as practice. And then I also offer 3 different degrees of initiation work, basically, to do with the fivefold goddess, so that as you progress in your relationship with these different aspects, that you can learn more directly from her.
And this can be done on one's own. This can be lone or solo initiation, right?
Yes, absolutely. This can be done solo or group, and I offer all kinds of different ways to work with it in a group context or by yourself.
So let's talk about Sapienta for a moment. I think our world, unfortunately, and I hate to generalize, but I think this applies, is lacking in wisdom. What are some of the ways that we can bring Sapienta into our world?
Well, you know, one of the people I think of, Justice Ginsburg, right, as an embodiment of both Sapientia and Antiqua.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the ways that we can bring in more of this energy is to recognize it where it exists. I also think of Malala Yousafzai as an embodiment of Sapientia. So this is where, you know, you get to see that it's not necessarily just a linearity process. Malala's 18, and we've known her for longer than that. But for me, she has always been an embodiment of Sapientia. Actually, I just put up a quiz on my website today if people want to take it, where you can figure out, you can find out which one of the 5 is your dominant aspect, because I think we all do have a dominant aspect of the 5. And if we feel like we're lacking in the other areas, we can cultivate those. So part of what we can do is to cultivate that in ourselves and to recognize it when we see it.
Absolutely. You know, it's interesting in your book that you've taken the traditional pagan wheel of the year, the Sabbats and the seasonal festivals, which mark the turning of the wheel of the year and the cycles of nature, and you've adapted it to be more fluid. You say, allow the wheel to change and adapt as needed. Is that kind of approach to the wheel, which is often thought of as static and seasonal, is that a radical approach?
I would say it is. It's radically very much about owning your own magical process. One of the things also that I say in the book is like, you know, yeah, you can find a table of correspondence, but just remember, it's okay if it works for you, but also someone made that up at some point.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't work for you, make it up so it works for you. I'm very much an advocate for self-directed magic.
Absolutely. You know, it's interesting that many of us, especially many of our listeners, have been on a spiritual path and a path of enlightenment and finding things out for a long, long time. And many of us have encountered teachers who teach a way and say, this is the way. And as soon as I hear somebody say, this is the way, I run away.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. You know, and again, it's I think that if there is a human impulse, it's for safety. Right. And that is a form of seeking safety when one teaches from an absolute.
Absolutely. Now, where do men fit into the jailbreaking the goddess approach?
Well, I did have a number of male test readers. The book is written with the universal female instead of the universal male. We're used to reading books that say he, him, his, right? But mm-hmm. this says she, her, hers. And so even a few of my female test readers were like, men are going to have a really hard time reading this. And I was like, but it's not for them. It's for us. And not everything needs to be for men. At the same time, it doesn't need to be for you to read it. So I hope that men read it. My first book, Sexy Witch, also was written for a female audience, and I had men write me letters and say that reading it changed their lives. So I hope that men will battle through the difficulties of reading a text written for women. Just remember, we women read texts written for men every day. So even I think even just the process for a man of reading a book that is written for women will change how you think.
And what can men do to support women, sisters, mothers, lovers, friends, in stepping into their goddess selves?
Allow them to do it in a way that is in alignment for them.
Yeah.
Right? That's ultimately it. Like, we can't require women to have children in order to be seen as divine, for example.
Right, right. That's the truth, absolute truth. You mentioned your book from Llewellyn Books, Sexy Witch. Tell us a little bit about that book.
Sexy Witch is a self-referential sexuality and spirituality workbook for women, and it came out a decade ago. It's currently out of print, but I think Llewellyn is talking about bringing it back into print. So if you want a copy, get in touch with Llewellyn and tell them that you hope that they bring Sexy Witch back into print, because that will make a difference.
Wonderful. You know, you're also the proprietor of a thriving online teaching and coaching practice for more than 10 years that you run called Entrepreneurial Trainings for Wild Hearts. Please tell us about that program and the work you do with people.
So I do a lot of work with people too, and, you know, mostly women, but I do have a number of male clients as well and have over the years. I do a lot of work helping people to arrive at what it is that they want to be doing, the thing that's in them needing to be done, and to help them to manifest that in a way that is aligned and integrated for them.
Wonderful. So your book just came out. What's next on the agenda for LaSara Firefox Allen?
Well, I have a proposal in right now, so I can't really talk about it because it hasn't been bought yet, but I'm hoping more on the front of feminism and feminist spirituality.
Wonderful. LaSara Firefox Allen, author of the brand new book, Jailbreaking the Goddess. LaSara, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you and your wonderful work.
You can find me at my website, LaSaraFirefoxAllen.com. You can search Jailbreaking the Goddess, or you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. And I look forward to interacting with you.
And thank you so much for joining us tonight. I think your message is really important, especially looking at the world as it exists today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a delight.
And thank you all for joining us tonight. I'm Victor the Voice Furman. This is Destination Unlimited. Join us next week at the same time, and have a great evening.